We have Michael Adam with A Stage for Samba in the Era of the Container Platform. Please stay tuned for a moment until we switch.
Hi, everybody. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you fine.
All right. So, yeah, thanks. Thanks for the organizing this conference. It's great. I understand these are times where it is very difficult, but I think so far we have done really well. Of course, we won't get these kind of nice t-shirts this year or something similar, but we're still trying to make the best out of it. So let me just do a little bit of an announcement of what's upcoming. Here is the talk where I'm going to talk a little bit about actually what I've been up to recently and over the last few years and how it can possibly tie back again to Samba. Then we'll have from my team in Red Hat, from Günther, Anoop, and Sachin, we have talks upcoming after this about the reports with Gluster and Samba and CDTP kind of experiences from the field and how we improved on those. And after that, we'll introduce a new test framework that nicely ties back to Martin Schwenke's and Amadeus' talk earlier, where we are adding a test in on a real cluster with Samba, etc. So this is a fleet of three consecutive talks here. And after that introduction, let me just start sharing my screen. Just a second. Alrighty. Let me see if that's actually the correct one. Yeah, looks like you should be able to see my screen now in presentation in full screen mode. Can you please confirm?
Yes, that's perfect.
Okay, great. So what is the background for this presentation? The background is that, the world is changing. Like in a couple of years back, the last few decades, I should actually say, we had an environment where there was a lot of VMs, bare metal hosts in the infrastructure, in the data center. People were directly using storage, were writing the applications on servers that were attached to storage. And SMB and other NAS protocols like NFS were very, very dominant and present in that environment. So now in the last few years, the VM infrastructure has mostly been moved to the infrastructure in the cloud and the data center, and the actual applications are oftentimes using a more, what is deemed a more modern way, containerized applications that are running in a container orchestration platform. The most prominent one that I'm aware of and which I'll be addressing today is the Kubernetes container orchestration platform. So, up till now, there hasn't been a lot of space for NAS protocols, a little bit for NFS, but especially not for Samba. So with my long background in Samba development and still managing and be participating in the Samba team in storage in Red Hat, I was looking for opportunities, or I was spotting opportunities where I think we can have a very nice and compelling new justification for Samba even in that environment. So here is what the talk is going to cover. I'll talk a little bit about Kubernetes because not everybody may be familiar with Kubernetes, at least from the kind of storage adapter perspective. I'll talk about, like, in those scenarios where we have big environments with a lot of VMs, containers, etc., where is storage actually located? And in the third part, I will say, okay, where do we enter Samba again into this? At the end, if time permitting, I will hopefully be able to give a live demo of something that I hacked up over the last week or two. And that might be a nice indication of what we're possibly going to see in the near future. All right. So Kubernetes, it's all about containers. So if you look at the website, kubernetes.io, It says Kubernetes is an open source system for automating deployment, scaling, and management of containerized applications. That's quite a number of words, but it's all about you have your applications split up in containers, nicely isolated. They come along with their environment, their runtime, basically, userland, and then usually a perfect citizen for such a containerized application environment would be an application there where each component runs in its own container. That's the so-called microservice architecture. And then the Kubernetes system itself will take care of installing, running, scaling up and down the number of copies that are running for certain components of your application. So let's look at a diagram for what are the components on the layouts of Kubernetes. So here on the left-hand side, we have the Kubernetes control plane. This is usually what is called the master nodes of Kubernetes. So Kubernetes is always a cluster, right? When you're talking container, yeah, sure. Many people have on Docker or Podman containers or even LXC containers on the Linux host, but this is always a cluster. We have here the master nodes with the control plane, and here we have the worker nodes, as they're called, which host the actual container applications. So a couple of things, etcd is the distributed store where all the objects and the information is stored in Kubernetes. The API server here is the central thing. Kubernetes is all about APIs. Every resource, every object in Kubernetes has an API definition that is versioned, etc. It is usually represented as a YAML file and by a command line tool called kubectl, or also called kubectl. You interact with that API server and you tell it to that you want some containers running on some of your worker nodes, and it will figure out which one is the best and will deploy and scale those applications there. So that's part of the scheduler that will determine the best way to schedule where resources are sufficient to run that container and how to best distribute it. I won't go into all the details about this, what is your cloud controller manager and so on. So this is not my diagram. I took it from the documentation material on kubernetes.io, which is actually pretty pretty big and decent. So let's look a little further about storage, right? So the containers are, the way it is designed to be for these applications, are ephemeral in nature. You kill the container, you bring it up on a different node, everything is gone. It will just be started fresh from its container image. But then even if that's the paradigm, some applications want to store some data. If you have a web server application, you surely don't want to lose that your website's content if you schedule the actual web server to another node. So you need persistent storage. So Kubernetes has some 3-4 years ago, roughly, maybe 5 years ago, started to introduce an abstraction for storage, for persistent storage. So a little bit of terminology here. At the core of it is a persistent volume, abbreviated as PV. That is basically a Kubernetes object that is wrapping some kind of backend storage. This backend storage could live inside of Kubernetes as a local disk on a host, or it could be a SAN or NAS attached storage somewhere outside. There are two flavors of persistent volumes as of recently, file system and block. So file system will come across to the container that is consuming this volume as a file system, and the block type volume or block type PV will directly be handed in as a block device into the container. But this is kind of just a side note. I'm mainly interested in file system type volumes at this stage. So this persistent volume is a global object in Kubernetes, and we have on top of that a persistent volume claim that you can imagine as a handle for a user, for an application to consume a persistent volume. And this is bound to a certain namespace. So everything in Kubernetes is usually namespaced. It's called namespaces or project where you run your container applications. You can create a new namespace if you want to have an isolation and you want to do operations on your application or your project entirely. So that's nice. We have a persistent volume and a persistent volume claim. How do we get that persistent volume into a container? That's the job of a so-called mount plugin or a driver. mounts the volume on the host node, not in the container, and then bind mounts it into the container. Obviously for block PVs, it's slightly different, but it's also attached to the host. And then via some device directory bind mount also hands it into the container. So the container gets a mount of a directory from the host. The directory happens to be mounted with a backend storage, but it's just a directory. So for the purpose of the container, it just gets a directory of a POSIX-like file system. Nice. That means the complexity of knowing how that storage works on how to mount it and about the drivers, it's completely abstracted away from the applications. It's on the host, and that component, the mount plugin, is actually running on all the hosts, all the nodes in the cluster. And so containers can be scheduled anywhere, and it can then attach to a certain volume. Right, now, that's all nice, but this is about convenience and automation. So the next stage after introducing the concept of persistent volumes is the concept of dynamic provisioning. So dynamic provisioning is basically introducing a self-service for volume creation for the users of the cluster, right? So we have various components. One server component that is running on the cluster, it's so-called dynamic provisioner, or just provisioner for short. It is basically responding to those create requests for persistent volume claims and will respond back with the created volumes if it could satisfy the request. The storage class is actually the object that defines, the storage class is the object that the user will refer to, say, okay, I want some volume, 10 gigabyte, out of that storage class. The storage class points to the dynamic provisioner. It also has some configuration possibly for that provisioner, telling it how to reach its backend storage. So imagine we have a cluster or a Ceph-based provisioner. The storage class will tell it where to kind of find its storage. The provisioner component knows how to provision volumes out of a configured Ceph or cluster storage, but the storage class will tell the provisioner how to reach that storage. And so the flow is, in here you see the first instance of kubectl, right? Kubectl create or apply. You have a pvc.yaml file. I'll show you one in a bit. The YAML file defining the PVC, you just created. The API server takes this, it will look it up what is there. It says, oh, it's the storage class. Oh, it points to that provisioner with that configuration data. And it will basically, to the effect that the provisioner eventually reacts to this and creates the PVC and returns it back to the user. So after that, it will have PVC, and it can use it and mount it inside an application. So, right. Okay, I've got a small demo at this point. Let me see. I need to share again with a different window. Share screen. So I'm shelling out now. I hope the screen is, wait a minute. Does that work when I resize the window? Can people confirm that they can see my shell?
Yes, that's okay. Perfect.
Good, because the green frame seems to be, let me just for a second, let me do this again. Share it once more so that I have the full window for sure. All right, so what I have here is I have a very, very small Kubernetes cluster, which is just a single node cluster. It's mainly for testing and development purposes. It's called Minikube. Minikube is up and running. It is running in my libvirt environment. So, and I have already, so Minikube, you Google for Minikube, you find a lot of information how to use it or set it up. It's super easy. And now I have my kubectl. So this is, by the way, very typical. You can run this kubectl kubectl command from anywhere where you can reach the Kubernetes cluster over the network. So let's do this. So typically, the way the kubectl works is you do kubectl verb, a type, and then a name for the object. So kubectl get pod, nothing. Kubectl, so pod, what is a pod? A pod is just the smallest unit in which we can run containers. A pod is typically one container, but it can also be multiple containers. For our purposes here, a pod is equivalent to a container. So kubectl get, for instance, namespaces. We see that a couple of namespaces have been created already in default, then some Kubernetes internal ones, and then I have a namespace for storage cluster. Oh, that's interesting. Let's do pod dash namespace storage cluster. And it is nice command line completion, by the way. So, oh, I see there are actually three containers running. There's a so-called cluster file provisioner. There's a cluster FS pod that is actually one pod that is running. Cluster here in this case, I have used the cluster example because this cluster scales down so well that you can run it in Minikube and have a working example. Of course, it's not a real cluster, it's just one node, but it still works. And we have the Hecate component, which is kind of a high level service interface for on top of cluster for creating, deleting, managing volumes that we've written in order to enable this running this storage in Kubernetes. So now let me see, Kubernetes kubectl storage class, or you can abbreviate SC. Okay, there are two storage classes. One is cluster file, and one is standard, which is just host path. Host path means you can just wrap a local directory on a node, on a host node in a persistent volume. You do need to do that manually. It's not very interesting. Let's just use the cluster file storage class. So let's just look to the screen. Examples, PVC, mypvc1, YAML. Okay, let's look at how such a PVC description look like. Every Kubernetes object has a kind. This is persistent volume claim. This is the type. It has a version. It has some metadata, the name, mypvc, and then the actual specification or spec, as it's called. It has an access mode. It has a request for a certain size. And here it calls the which storage class name, right? So when I create or apply this one, it will try and go get a cluster volume for me and do this. So let me see. Let me once more describe the storage class cluster file. Let's look how that storage class is actually defined, right? So annotations, let's ignore that. This is the name of the provisioner. So the storage class points to this. It's also namespaced. And it, here is a parameter that will be handed to this. So this is the actual like URL under which this Hecate service is reachable. We have seen there's a Hecate container running, and that's actually all it needs to know. Okay, so let's do. Kubectl apply or create, and that will work as well. Examples, mypvc1.yaml. And kubectl get pod pvc. Let me see what we have. Oh, we have one persistent volume claim that is actually pending, and now it's bound, right? So let's see how to use that. How do we define a pod? Examples, pod.yaml. Let's look at that. It's also not very complicated. API version 1, kind is pod, I give it a name. And in the specification of the pod, the main thing is the container. It tells me what image, what container image to use. One standard image that I don't even need to specify the location of is an Nginx container that's just the web server. I give it a name, I export a certain port, and I say, okay, I define a volume for my container. I call it my vol, and it should be using the claim I just created, the persistent volume claim, my PVC1. And then here is the bind mount. I want to have this mounted under slash volume inside the container. All right. So let's create this. Kubectl, and then get pod pvc container creating. So here it is being created. That means the image is being pulled down and now it's running. So I can go, let me see, get pod wide. Let me just, okay, here is the IP address. It gets an internal IP address in the SDN, in the software-defined network inside Kubernetes. So let's do quickly go, because I have not exported the ports outside the Kubernetes cluster. Let me just go into my host node and do curl HTTP into this IP address. And oh, I get a website back, right? Okay, so that's working. Now let's go outside again. Kubectl exec. I can exec a command in a container. The container I'm using is my pod. I want it interactive with the terminal, and I exec the bash. So just user share nginx HTML. This is where the index HTML came from, just so that you don't know I'm not cheating. But I'm not gonna ignore the web server. I'm just gonna show you how this volume stuff works. I said I have mounted the volume under volume. Okay, let's do echo hello from my pod into volume hello, right? Okay, let's go out again and let's do something else. So it's actually more interesting to have a so-called deployment which describes an application than just a single pod. So if I look at this deployment thing, it's a new type of object in Kubernetes, a deployment. I give it a name, my deployment application is Nginx. It has a size, a number of replicas. This is gonna be interesting in a little while. And inside the spec of the deployment, I have a template for a pod. So if you look at this, this is a complete pod spec, just like the pod we described before, right? And now what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna create, I'm just gonna do one more thing. I'm just gonna watch or do in my kubectl get. I'm gonna not only look for, I can put multiple objects here, deployment, pod, and PVC. I'm gonna look for them. And now I'm gonna kubectl, come on, apply force. And now I'm gonna watch this. So a deployment has been created and it automatically creates this pod here. Now we have one. And now I'll show you a nice thing. So I'm gonna go kubectl exec my deployment. I'm gonna exec into this newly created pod. And I'm gonna go ls volume. Oh, there's the hello file. And it still contains the stuff. So echo hello from my deployment here. Oops. So I'm gonna append that. I'm gonna log off and now I'm gonna do something else just to see, okay, we have one here and one there and now What I'm going to show you now is kind of the scaling that I was referring to in my initial description. So kubectl edit deployment, and I have just one. I'm going to edit it. This is basically the schema up here, the type definition, and down here we have the actual object. And now I'm going to do replicas 6. I have a lot of demand from a web server. I just need more web server heads. And you see, nothing. Wait a second. Wait a minute. Doesn't work. Okay. Okay, that's nice. That's the nice thing about demos. I can do something else always. instead of doing this edit thing, I can go here and I can say I want 6 replicas here. And I'm doing and then I'm going to watch and I'm see, oh, currently it's creating another 5 instances of this thing. And I can go after a while, they're all there. Maybe last time I just changed the wrong one. Basically, I needed to. Interesting. Okay, that doesn't work as I wanted, but I can always edit it again and scale it down to 1. So this is something that I can apply and I can watch. So it's going to be no containers in terminating state. It takes a few seconds usually for them to go away. And that's kind of the thing with the deployment here. So let me just get rid of all these containers by kubectl delete deployment, my deployment, kubectl delete pod, my pod. Okay, that the pod removal takes a bit. And now, okay, everything's gone. I just have that persistent volume. So now if I'm doing actually like I'm doing the deployment. Again, the PVC was not gone, right? All the containers were gone. The persistent volume was still there. And now I'm going to exec into the deployment again. And there is still the hello file in the volume. So that is not very surprising. Okay. Let's clean up after ourselves. And there's just 1 PVC. Oh, come on, this demo is taking longer than I intended. So everything's gone. Right, that's the end of this first demo. Let me go back to my slides. Where are my slides? Okay, here are my slides. All right, it's gone. I need to speed up a little bit. One more aspect of Kubernetes is operators. So I showed you a lot of stuff that an admin would do, but there's a one more thing that is so nice, you can write so-called operators. It is a server component, a so-called controller, and it is responsible for so-called custom resources. So you can define new types that are extending the Kubernetes native APIs. And it's always like a declarative approach. You have this the resource type that you define. You have a desired state. I already showed it to you with the replica count in that and that deployment. You say, oh, I want 6, and the operator will go and make sure you have 6 of them, etc. But you can also create your own new types extending the APIs of Kubernetes here. And those operators will be basically managing your application. They will be responsible for initial deployment. It will be responsible for maintaining the state, the desired state, and in the extreme case, even for like automating scaling up and down based on load. There is meanwhile a big infrastructure for that. I have provided a couple of links here. You can even on the operator hub IO click and have essentially like GUI based click on your application and you get it into your Kubernetes cluster. And there are some examples that I'll detail later. Right. I want to mention just for completeness that the Kubernetes storage abstraction has been standardized into something that is applicable for other orchestrators like Cloud Foundry, Mesos, Nomad, etc. And it is now the new standard in recent Kubernetes version. And here is on GitHub, you see the container storage interface specification. This is the Semrush API. So the development of a new driver that includes mount plugin and provisioner for Kubernetes has become a lot easier with that. One example that we recently created is the Ceph CSI driver for dynamic provisioning and for mounting of Ceph-based, CephFS-based and RBD-based volumes. Right. So in the abstract, I mentioned objects, so file block and object. Object access S3 protocol or so are not part of the core Kubernetes or CSI APIs or access protocols, but extensions are possible with the use of these operators and CRDs. And currently a native Kubernetes enhancement is discussed in the link I'm providing here. But I'm not going to go into object access at all at this point, just for completeness. All right, storage location. So this is going to be like, I'm looking a little broader now, very conceptually, right? So in the platform, and I'm going to possibly, let me see, where is the storage running? So what we've done in Red Hat, where I basically showed you the first tiny instance of this with the cluster provisioner. We have brought a software-defined storage system into Kubernetes. And Kubernetes distribution, Reddit is called OpenShift. We have the first generation was based on cluster. You saw the Hecate component, our dynamic provisioner. The second generation that has just been released for the first time this year is based on Ceph. It is operator driven, it has a GUI, it's all based on CSI, and it's kind of the modern way. The architecture looks a little bit like this. Just you have a lot of like, these are zones. In this example, it's kind of in AWS. It can be run in any kind of infrastructure. You have the actual OpenShift cluster. You have container components, an operator here for the whole thing. Then you have Ceph components, monitors, manager, OSDs, CSI drivers on all nodes, etc. And then you tie this all together with the SDN between the nodes. And then you have bucket claims, volume claims for file and object, etc. So this is a And it, because of all these GUIs and operators, it's so easily automated. You just have a one-click install and you have a working Ceph installation and self-service, and then you can start expanding it and tuning it. What I just described in concept, so I didn't manage to get nice slides, so I draw some by hand. So what do we have here? I'm talking about infrastructure versus platform. Infrastructure is, I'm calling it the machines. It can be bare metal machines, that can be VMs, I don't care. It is where are my servers running? And so if in the model I just described, I have machines that run my Kubernetes nodes, and I have my SDS, my software-defined storage system that is consuming some backend storage from some disks. I have it running inside this Kubernetes. So the Kubernetes cluster is spanning a certain set of machines. But that storage inside the Kubernetes cluster here is just made for the containerized applications that are running here. This is all Linux. For instance, there's really no big use. Even if I have a Windows VM out here, it is not very natural and not very easy for it to access that storage. So that's the storage converged with a platform. Platform is the container platform, right? So that is running in those VMs. Next thing is, storage on top of the infrastructure, but separate from the Kubernetes platform. So here's the Kubernetes application platform. Here I have different sets of machines. Again, it can be VMs or bare metal machines, whatever. And I am installing into these machines software-defined storage nodes, like the Ceph cluster, etc. And then I'm serving over the network volumes into the Kubernetes cluster for the applications to consume. And then I can very well put additionally SMB service or other NAS service on top and have other machines consume this. This is a possibility. Next possibility is also interesting, right? And here's where it's getting a little messy. So you have storage converged with the infrastructure, not running on top of it, right? So meaning, that's typically some kind of virtualization, some hypervisor thing, not bare metal. So you have a Kubernetes cluster running on VMs, nice, and you have some other VMs around here, like Windows VMs, for instance. Here, you have the software-defined storage that is somehow converged with your hypervisor. It's running below those VMs, right? And this would be used, for instance, to serve images for the VMs, and also that would be a block store thing, and then you have volumes for the applications here. But then you can have an SMB service on top of your software-defined storage system and serve it into the Windows VM over here for application data. So examples for that are, for instance, if you have an, for instance, OpenStack as a big VM in like, look, on-premises cloud system. We have a solution where Ceph is running converged with that infrastructure. And if you put Kubernetes inside, you can have it this way in principle, at least technically. Not saying that it's in a product. I'm just saying what technically is possible. But this is very special, right? If you are running on a public cloud like AWS, Google Cloud, Azure, you won't be able to do that because you don't own the hypervisor, at least if you come with open source components, which I'm always doing here. So, right. So what else? What can we do? This is kind of a little weird. So here's the next thing. That layering. We always had that layering Kubernetes. The container application is running on top of the infrastructure. And now here, what if we reverse the layers? The platform is the infrastructure, actually, more or less. You see, it's more or less the same box. So what I'm saying is, at the bottom, it's just bare metal. At the bare metal machines, we are directly installing Kubernetes. So everything is a container, kind of the new paradigm. And then you're running your SDS system inside the containers. And here comes the new thing. There is a relatively new project that will allow you to run your Windows or whatever VMs inside Kubernetes as containers. I mean, remember, on Linux, a VM is just a KVM process. So a process can run, can be encapsulated in a container. So that new project will run your Windows VMs in containers. It does that by creating new custom resources and operators, and it very, very naturally integrates that into Kubernetes APIs. So you can manage your Windows VMs with the same tools, GUI and command line tools that you manage your container applications with. And now we have quite a different story for using an inside the container landscape, suddenly a Samba service, because we could use that inside the Windows VM. KubeVert is the project I mentioned, but I'm going quick. So I have made a case for we can use Samba here, right? So just to summarize, Windows running in VMs as KubeVert as containers. The other part is mixed clusters. The control plane is always Linux, but you can add Windows worker nodes. When they want to access our PVCs that are living on the Linux nodes, they can do that with SMB for file and iSCSI for block. And I want to highlight one extra thought here, right? If you are going for the applications, right? Windows applications and some project and some namespace, maybe if that's just a test setup, it would be so great if you could just add Active Directory services for a project as a service into Kubernetes. Like, okay, you want a project with Windows VMs with KubeVert, and you want file services, and maybe you want to have one Active Directory domain out of the box, we can do it. I have not done it yet, but it should be feasible. So what can we do, right? As we heard, clustered Samba, the big clustered SDS, it's always difficult. So here, SMB service on PVCs is my new thing I want to introduce here. Like, I have the PVC. What if we just create one SMB instance, one Samba server on for each PVC, right? We only need a very simple container. We need no clustering. We are just using a container with Samba, bind mounting the PVC inside it and serving it out with SMB, right? So this is how it would look like. We have a backend persistent volume claim. We're putting a Samba container on top, just one-to-one. One Samba container for each backend persistent volume that I want to export this way. And then I can in one or multiple Windows VMs accessing it, right? I have created two POC projects. One is a simple, like a super, super simplistic Samba container. Runs only SMBD, serves out /share as a share, a single share, current user. We can expand on it, but good enough for a POC. And I have written a small Samba operator. I was using this operator SDK that does a lot of code generation. All the boilerplate code is generated for me. It defines two new types, SMB service, which puts SMB container on top of an existing persistent volume. And it defines an SMB PVC type that creates a new PVC for you and an SMB service on top of it. And now it's demo time again. And I hope I'll have enough time for that.
You have about 5 minutes left.
Thanks. Yeah, that should do. Mostly it's like only the demo. So let me share my screen again. And I'm going to go here. Right. Okay. So I was talking about those new types, kube control, get, SMB service. Oh, the server doesn't have a resource type SMB service. Okay, let's do make install. It's installing a couple of custom resources, one for SMB PBCs and one for SMB service. And by the way, you can see it in the slides. I have clickable links. I have done it so that the containers I'm building here, both for the Summer container and for the operator, are all uploaded to Quay.io, so you can pull that publicly. And I am installing some kind of authentication things, and then I have a deployment that actually creates my operator here. So let's do the same thing. Service. Oh, no resource found in default namespace. Suddenly, kubectl knows about SMB service. It also knows about SMB PVC. All right, so get pod. Oh, I have a pod running named Samba operator. Interesting. I can always debug like this. Kube logs. Oh, there's something going on. All right, but there's nothing to manage yet. So let's give it something to manage. Right, so let's first apply again the example mypvc.yaml, right? So you remember the deployment that I showed you for this SMB service, right? It was not super complicated, but it is a bit verbose, right? And now if I look at examples, my SMB service, that's that simple. I'm just giving it a name and I'm telling it what PVC I want to use as the backend. So let's create this. Creating this. No, SMB service, pod, PVC, oh, come on, typing, pod, PVC, right? So I have a service here, name, SMB my PVC service. I have a new SMB my PVC pod, that's the Samba server. And by the way, because I have an operator for this thing, and this requires the pod, and I can also look at the deployment. I have this SMB MyPVC deployment. Whenever I remove any intermediate object, the reconcile loop for this thing will recreate it again. But if I, for instance, remove, delete my SMB service, my SMB, my, come on. If I delete that, it will not delete the persistent volume. So now I'm showing you, just to finish up here, the new type of SMB PVC. So name is my SMB PVC. And embedded, it has under a layer PVC. It has just a complete, possibly a complete PVC spec. Delete PVC. And I am actually now applying this as the final step, and then I'm done. Come on. It takes a second or two. It should be done. Come on. Seriously. Well. Okay. Examples, my SMB. SMB PVC. So we now have wait a minute, I'm here. here. So we have SMB PVC and I have SMB service pod PVC. I have it all here. And if I do exec interactive SMB and see there's Samba running. I see there's a share called share and I can actually access it with Samba user, some password, and I can actually act on it. I am out of time, so I'm gonna stop my sharing, but you've basically seen all my demo I wanted to show. And
yeah, thank you very much, Michael.
That's
there are some questions in the Q&A section. Feel free to answer them via chat. And we will be back in 15 minutes with a report from the field, Samba clustering with GlassFS, with Günther, Deschner, and Noob. Yeah, stay tuned. Thank you.
Thanks.